is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. It's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Hi, Uri. It's Nicole Whitney calling News for the Soul. Welcome to News for the Soul, Robert Allen.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to be here with you tonight.
Why are you here? We're talking to Carolyn Mace about Sacred Contracts, one of her many best-selling books. Welcome to the show, Greg Braden.
Well, good evening, Nicole. It's certainly a pleasure to hear your voice and a pleasure to be here tonight.
Welcome to the show, Stuart Wild.
Thank you very much.
John Kehoe, welcome to News for the Soul.
Hey. Next on News for the Soul, it's time for Transformational Healing with Yanya. Yanya is a very powerful and intuitive energy healing practitioner. She's gifted at helping people to better handle their lives and to get a deeper understanding of their connection with spirits. Her experience is based on decades of study of many true teachings of the world, as well as her own search and practice of ancient wisdom, mystical traditions, and quantum physics. Let's welcome Yanya back to News for the Soul now.
Let's find out if she's on the board. I hope so, because I love speaking with Yanya. Yanya, are you there?
Yes, I'm waiting for you impatiently.
Oh, you're here. Yay. It's so good to hear your voice. How are you?
Yeah. Oh, I'm really good. We're having beautiful weather right now, even though it's really cold. I expect in your part of the world it's cold as well.
It's wet. I'm in Vancouver. Wet, wet, wet.
Oh. Well, we need rain, don't we? Sometimes.
I can have ours.
It rain at night instead of raining during the day. That would be perfect, yeah. Wouldn't it?
It would. See, that would make sense to me. So what's new?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was going to talk to you today about truth of the surrender, because we, for the most part, we totally resist having to surrender anything, because we associate it with giving up, with being weak and indecisive. All those things that we're told will get us nowhere, because to succeed in the world, we have to know what we want, we have to go for it, never give up, and all of that is true. But it's also true that surrendering is a necessary part of life when we consider it in its wholeness as both material and spiritual. Our greatest successes and breakthroughs in life appear when we have truly surrendered our will to the divine will. Where there is wholeness, where there is just one of anything, there can't be an opposing quality. So we can be totally active and going for what we want in life, while at the same time in consciousness, we're taking action from a surrendered perspective, meaning that we don't really truly know what is the divine purpose for our life, what is best for us in the long run. And so what we're doing is only our best guess at what will accomplish our material goals: better health, more money, the perfect soulmate, or success in the professional world. But we must surrender the outcomes of our actions to the higher wisdom of spirit, which knows what is best for our continued evolution. So let's take the example of improving our health. Whenever we have a health problem, we look at the symptom and do our very best to heal, suppress, or repress it, and never think that the physical body is the last place where the issue shows up. The actual issue started at the invisible level of our thoughts and beliefs, which are not in alignment with what source is. They're setting up a vibration in our field contrary to the vibration of perfection of our soul. Then That vibration permeates our mental and emotional field, gradually solidifying until it gets to the physical body, where it outpictures as the problem we have. So you see, just removing or suppressing that symptom doesn't address the deeper cause, which lies in the mental and emotional bodies and in the electromagnetic field around our body. That vibration, contrary to the vibration of divinity, is still there and will have to solidify into another problem, sometimes unrelated to the previous issue we had. But its original cause is the same. And until we go to that deeper cause and change certain thoughts and beliefs that are not congruent with the divine part of us, we will continue to have problems, whether they appear as health problems, money problems, relationship problems, or work problems. And to give you an example in nature, when you have an apple tree where the apples start showing up as small or shriveled up or with blemishes, do you pour the fertilizer onto the apples and think that will fix the problem? I don't think so. So what you do is fertilize the soil around the roots of the tree to have a crop of healthy, beautiful apples. And our spiritual connection to divinity works in the same way. When our thoughts and beliefs are healthy, they align with the wholeness, completeness, and perfection of our soul, where lack is the only thing that cannot exist. Our body then also becomes healthy and vibrant. We must surrender every sort of lack, limitation, or not having, and tap into the knowing we are what our spirit already is. Every time we're faced with a serious or chronic health problem, since we took the example of health, the mind immediately searches for an outer solution for that issue, to effect a change in the symptom we have, forgetting that for any change to occur in the physical, at least any permanent change, and that's what we all want, okay? We must change at a deeper, energetic level. Energy is not linear. It's everywhere and all-encompassing. While the mind is linear, and can only come up with a solution that's already known to the linear mind. Something that has already been done in the past by someone or for someone. Something that has already worked, like some medication or a change in diet or change in routine or even a surgery. And that solution may have helped someone, or even many people. But we're all different. And what works for one person may not work for another. Because the underlying vibrational cause is different. That difference lies in our thoughts, perceptions, and beliefs. So a certain symptom, looking the same on the surface, may very well have a different cause as far as thoughts, perceptions, and beliefs are concerned. One person may have had a vibration of fear, and the other person may have had thoughts of unforgiveness or anxiety or feeling insecure. All of those set up negative vibrations that the source of our being simply can't have. In order to heal, we must diminish the vibration difference between the personal self and the soul. And so our whole journey in this world is about raising our consciousness to higher and higher levels. That in itself can be one of the reasons why certain of our issues don't seem to heal. If they did, we would not search for a higher level of consciousness. So we have serious or chronic issues that force us to surrender to a higher power. We are forced to change our relationship with the problem, to stop judging it as bad, unwanted, or to be rid of. Anyway, nothing we do seems to get rid of it, to start looking at it as a gift, to teach us a wisdom we don't yet have, to adopt a different mentality. That's why there can't be just one way of healing anything, because the cause for the symptom is different. This being said, it's also true that certain solutions do work for a great many people. And that's because basically we have very similar thoughts, emotions, and beliefs. We also need to remember that before we were born into this world, we were spiritual beings with total awareness of all our past lives, which are really present lives in the spiritual dimension, that we had a purpose for incarnating and have designed and set up challenges for ourselves to actually fulfill that purpose. And even though we've forgotten this as we came into the material plane, the part of us that is still spirit knows the setup for our spiritual growth. And that's for us to become, while in the body, more of who and what our spirit is, and so express its qualities into the world. The mistakes we make are due to our misperception of who we really are. And even those mistakes are and will always be used by spirit for our growth and evolution. In the truest sense, every mistake only leads to a better understanding of who we really are, and so ultimately, there are no mistakes. When we have a chronic health problem and fight it mentally and emotionally, or at the very least deny or suppress it, so it's not recognized or accepted, that is the opposite of surrender. If we could just remember that we've set up our challenges for our spiritual evolution, so there must be some benefit in this situation, then our approach can change. We can ask the open-ended question of, what's right about this situation that I'm not seeing in this moment? And this moment really means this moment, not the past, not even 1 minute ago, but now. Not in the future, what it might be, but right now. And even if you're in pain right now, you can know the pain is here to communicate to you in the only way the body knows how, that it's unhappy and hurt by something you're thinking, believing, doing, or not doing. So you surrender all your ideas of what should be, how you want things to be, and focus on what quality do I still need to be at peace in this situation. A quality that I don't yet express in my life. How can I align more with that, with what spirit is? What's right about this situation? And even just those questions, which you don't have to answer, raise your vibration just a little. And as you practice that moment by moment, your conscious mind is engaged with a question that gives your mind permission to search for a positive answer. Because trying to stop your mind altogether, which many people do, or trying to stop it from having negative thoughts has never worked, has it? It just gets you more and more frustrated. But in this way, you are redirecting your mind to think positive thoughts. Every time you find something right about a situation, you recognize a goodness that you didn't see the moment before. And just searching for what is good and right, while not coming up with a specific thing immediately, still keeps you in a positive vibration. When things go well, implicitly, you become grateful. It's already in your feeling. Anchoring gratitude in this way will, over time, clear your energy field, lead to better and happier thoughts, and lead to better health, prosperity, or whatever it is that you desire. You're surrendering your pattern of always either fighting against something or for something. You're relaxing into an open question of what's right about this situation, which leads you into a positive pattern of thinking. You're no longer maintaining an opinion about how things should be, which always provokes a contrary opinion. And then you have a fight on your hands. But you're taking each moment as it is and calling forth better future moments through the positive mindset of asking what is right about this moment. In the same way, and for the same reasons that we surrender on physical issues, we also need to surrender on mental and emotional issues. Because once again, surrendering is the opposite of fighting. And fighting or being against anything has never solved any problem. Every war has caused more wars, and the outer is a reflection of what's going on inside of us. And inside, we're always fighting those parts of us that we've decided we don't like, that are bad, unacceptable, not good enough, or just not nice. In our minds, we're always fighting something. Fighting our less than good thoughts and feelings. Fighting our government. Fighting our partner, our children. Devaluing our job. Complaining about the economy, injustices, taxes. We're fighting behaviors, patterns. In essence, we're fighting God. Because we know that everything is energy, that energy is one and indestructible, synonymous with God, who is one and indestructible. And by that attitude, we're just creating conditions in this world that we then criticize and judge as painful and bad. What would happen if we just stopped all fight and accepted every manifestation of energy just as it is, without any judgment as to whether it's good or bad? Because our own individual judgment holds good only for us, not necessarily for the next person, unless they have the same judgment, and are now talking about a decision made in consciousness to allow everything to be just as it is. This doesn't mean we condone crime, stealing, cheating, or lying. It doesn't mean that if we're in a position to stop destructive activities, we don't do it. But it does mean that in consciousness, we recognize the essential oneness throughout all life, and that everyone and everything is an expression of the one energy we call God or Source. However, human beings gifted with free will have the capacity of using God energy in destructive ways. Energy is one and just is. How that energy is used is a totally different thing. So we stop the destructive use of energy if we can, but we keep our hearts open, appreciative, and grateful for having that energy. We do our best to use it in constructive ways, and that includes having no negative judgment about any other part of that energy. And where we most need to abandon criticism and judgment is where we judge and criticize ourselves for our shortcomings, where we beat ourselves up and blame ourselves for not doing things right, for messing up, for not being good enough. It's important to realize that no one is ever doing wrong things on purpose. Everyone is always doing the best they can with the knowledge and consciousness they have in any given moment. If they knew better, they would do better. And that includes you. You are doing the best you can with the knowledge and consciousness you have right now. And so, you're good enough right now. And this does not preclude that tomorrow or next week or next year, you will not have a better understanding and so act differently, giving you a result you like better. But blaming yourself for what you did in the past is a pretty useless exercise, especially since the painful outcome was the opportunity you needed to learn to make a different choice next time. It got you to a place where now you know better. So a little bit of gratitude towards your former self would be in order, don't you think? As your all-knowing consciousness, are little by little educating your ego, made up of all the qualities that you like, to accept those other parts that you rejected because of difficult life experiences, some you've had and some you've seen played out by others, and so judged them as bad. And that's just a judgment. Consciousness knows everything just is. It's neither good nor bad. It has anchored some of that knowing into your ego so that blame of yourself can be dissolved. You are being taken on a journey of dissolving blame and judgment of anyone, of having forgiveness and compassion for everyone, every other ego in this world, whatever their actions are, because you know they have the same spirit within them that you have. Just recently, I've had another insight, another way of looking at what in essence is forgiveness. Anyone committing atrocities is not yet able to surrender to their spirit as we have, since we have compassion and hold no blame, resentment, or hate for those who commit their worst crimes. And since we're aware of the events, and that's the insight I had, since we are aware of them, the atrocities perpetrated allowed for more compassion and forgiveness to be expressed into the world. In some mysterious way, whatever crimes I am aware of or witness are also done so I can respond from a higher consciousness than last. Basically, it's the story of Jesus and Judas repeating itself on every level of the human journey. On one level, Judas was betraying Jesus, and he lived on the human level, so that's why he hung himself. But on another level, Jesus would not have been able to fulfill his mission without Judas doing what he did. Jesus, having a higher understanding, knew Judas had to fulfill his mission so that Jesus could accomplish his work. So there was no mistake. There was nothing wrong. There was no harm done. And everything was in divine order. Even our seeming mistakes are used by spirit for a higher good. So suspending all blame, criticism, and judgment we have about everything that shows up, will translate into better and better experiences in every aspect of our life. Not only the physical and emotional, but in every area of our life, our work, relationships, personal development, and yes, even in our finances, because finances really are abundance. Only expressed as money if that's what's needed. But it can be expressed as an abundance of anything at all. So what if I told you that lacking things and missing things is also part of your abundance? That seems impossible. And yet, when you think of it, lack of things and an abundance of things are like two ends of a stick or two faces of a coin. They are indivisible, and the only difference between them is your judgment. So abundance can be seen as lack when you have an abundance of things you don't like and don't want. When you have lots of things you don't want, isn't that an abundance of those things? Look at your life and see what are the things that you want more of. First and foremost, you want more money, because that will allow you to buy most of the things you want. Certainly not all, but quite a few of them. And the only way to achieve financial stability, we're told, is to develop a consciousness of abundance, a feeling of having, in this instance, of having money. If you don't have that feeling, whatever money you make will immediately leave you for your rent, your food, your clothing. At the end of the month, you end up with nothing or even debt. You get given some extra money for your birthday, and immediately you find you have an extra expense, such as having to pay a speeding fine. But there is a way of cultivating a feeling of having, a feeling of abundance, even if all you see in your life is lack and limitation. Simply by acknowledging the abundance you see everywhere around you, and also in your life, without judgment. And without judgment are the operative words here. Because life is always presenting you with opportunities to let go of your criticisms and to see everything through the eyes of divinity, where everything just is. So first, look at how abundant nature is, when not interfered with by humans. There are thousands of leaves on every tree, not just enough. There are hundreds of seeds on every corn stalk. There's a profusion of sand on every beach, uncountable stars in the sky. But for a human being with free will, life is much less abundant. Could that be because we're using our free will not in alignment with the will of the universe? Let's try looking at things that you have in your life without any judgment. Look at that stack of unpaid bills on your desk. Wow, I have an abundance of bills. Look at your credit card debt and realize, I have an abundance of debt. It may not be an abundance of what you want, but it certainly is abundance if you don't judge it. Look at your almost empty bank account, and instead of feeling, I don't have enough, cultivate the feeling of, I have $10, and right now it's enough. In this moment, it is enough, because right now, you're listening to me speaking, and you don't need any money. You don't need those $10. Don't project into the future. Right now, you have enough. And with that feeling, your frequency rises a little more. you see a Ferrari speeding by, and instead of being envious, acknowledge how abundant the owner must be. Make it a practice to look for abundance in everything you encounter without judgment as to whether it's something you want or don't want. It doesn't matter if it's yours or someone else's. Abundance is a divine quality available to everyone, and acknowledging it honestly and authentically without judgment raises your vibration every time you do it. Turning to everything you don't want and seeing how abundant you are in that area won't bring you things you don't want, because as your vibration rises, unwanted things let go of you. They can't live in a high vibration of I have. And over time, things that match your new frequency, things that you do want, will start appearing in your life. So a frequency of lack must bring you more lack, and a frequency of abundance must bring you more abundance. But for our life to be permanently on the upward spiral, we must realize there is a higher intelligence than our human intelligence at work, that we don't really know what is for our highest good, and that surrendering to the unknown, to the will of God, that's only revealed one step at a time, is the path we must take, and it's a journey of consciousness. Once you've surrendered to that higher intelligence and received its guidance, then you start doing things in the physical world to bring about what you most desire. And while it's beneficial to surrender our limited human consciousness to a higher divine consciousness, we must remember that as human beings, we're all different. And so we go through many stages in human consciousness, from each of which surrender will necessarily look different. Even though in psychology and also spirituality, many levels of consciousness have been identified, I always think the simplest is the most practical and the best, so that we clearly see where we are positioned in relation to others and to the world at large. Only then will we know how we need to act, what changes we have to effect in ourselves in order to reach the next level, because we have full control only over what we think, what we believe, and how we act. Any control we seem to have over other people or outside circumstances is partial and can be taken away from us simply by people deciding they no longer wish to give away their God-given power. Just as we give our power to others, they also give away theirs. But as soon as we reclaim our power, no one can force us to think or do anything we don't want to do. So to draw a parallel between the development of our physical life and our spiritual life, in the physical, we start as a baby and grow to be a child, then a teenager, a young adult, and so on. And as we grow taller, we abandon the shoes that fitted us to get a new pair and the clothes that fitted us for different ones and bigger ones. In the same way, we also abandon some ways of thinking and being and interacting with the world that is no longer congruent with the person we are becoming, not only physically, but mentally, emotionally, and also spiritually. Spiritual part is the one we often brush aside and don't think much about. Yet, that's the most important one, because without it, without the spirit which entered the physical body to give it life, and allow it to grow and evolve, we would have been stillborn, not able to grow and evolve in any way. And just as each part of our human development is absolutely necessary for the next part to unfold, we must also go through every facet of our spiritual development if we want to finally truly be able to express what we came into this world for. And our purpose is not merely to have a comfortable life in a loving relationship, in a large house with the perfect job and lovely kids. All those things are wonderful. And while they make us happy for a while, we soon start wanting more money, a better job, a more fulfilling relationship, until we see that those material things are never quite enough. What's missing is the spiritual dimension, which usually can only be understood once we've fully lived and integrated all the human aspects of life on this planet. As we look around and see how some people take charge of their lives, decide what they want, then go out and get it, we start wanting the same for ourselves. We start taking back the power that first our parents had over us, then our friends or teachers, and realize we can actually decide what we want and get it. That's a profound realization, one of having control. And once you've tasted it, it's really hard to give up because it spells freedom, a responsibility for yourself and your actions, a sense of being capable of achieving what you set your mind on. You go from being a victim and having no control and no power to suddenly having all control and all power. And it's a little scary as well as exhilarating if sometimes the outcomes are not quite what you anticipated and you fall back into a sense of being a victim of circumstances, of having to acquiesce to other people's demands. The pull of that freedom is so strong you spend most of your life chasing it. As a young adult, you feel you can be, do, and accomplish anything. Life is wide open. You can choose any course of study, any career, and you are supported in the choices you make. You feel you're creating your reality, that God, Spirit, is there to help you. So you pray for the things you want in life and often manifest them. And sometimes you don't and feel like God has abandoned you, that life is against you. And so you try even harder to manifest and achieve. And again, things work for you. In the end, in spite of all the achievements, finally you realize that if you've created all the good things in your life, you've also created all the suffering and the misery you're enduring. And you simply don't know how to resolve that. Because trying to resolve it by getting more money, more material stuff, hasn't worked. And that's because you were creating from a sense of separation from divinity. Not through any fault of your own, but your whole life from the age of about 2 was lived in that sense of separation. And every religious teaching, whatever it is based on there being a God up in heaven somewhere and there being a you down on earth, and that your job is to get back up to heaven from where you came. When we're born, we're still for a time one with the spirit that gives us life and have no sense of separation from anything or anyone. Gradually, through seeing, hearing, and feeling through our physical senses, we perceive ourselves as being separate. And that is as it should be, since we're living in a physical reality. We need to learn how to operate in this world, because our purpose here is to bring all the aspects of divinity into this world through our physical bodies. Only when we've taken full responsibility for our own lives, have seen the power we have to make it what we want it to be, and have also discovered that of ourselves, we don't have all the power, because we can't make the misery and unfulfillment go away, no matter how much money and stuff we get. Only then are we ready to let go of control and humbly admit we don't know how to create true happiness and surrender all temporal ideas to a higher intelligence. We know that intelligence is there because it was helping us create what we wanted, but we felt separate from it. Now, we realize it was always within us and guiding us towards love, kindness, cooperation, helping and giving, rather than grasping and taking. But we were not listening to that soft spiritual voice of divinity, drowned by the loud demands of the ego. And so often people ask, when I have a desire to achieve something, how do I distinguish between what my ego says and what spirit says? What's the difference between my intuition and all the other thoughts that crowd in? And the answer is simple. The sound of your authentic voice is soft and encouraging. It will always say, yes, you can do it. You're awesome. You're capable. You're supported in all your highest desires. While the voice from your head, from your ego, is loud and insistent, and it warns you, are you sure you want to do this? It's going to be hard. It's too much. You can't do it. You might not succeed. But if God is with us, who or what can be against us? Only our limiting thoughts, our sense of separation from the divine, which is a lie, because so long as we have life, we can't be separate from the divine life. So we come to realize that the power we had to seemingly create our reality was always the power of God moving through us, that we're not separate from it, and that now, with this understanding, we can let God create through us what we most desire. We still have desires, we still create our reality, but from a consciousness of being one with divinity. And that makes all the difference between creating from a place of separation and creating from a place of unity. We surrender the small human I, which thought it had all the power, and we start manifesting our desires from the power of God that's always flowing through us. We've begun to realize the limitations of the separate self, that it's a limiting factor in experiencing divine power. And so, the more we can get out of the way, the more the divine can act through us. And I can't remember who said this, but it goes something like, I let my bloated sense of self get out of the way of the divine circuits. That divinity is available to everyone equally, to the saint and the sinner, to the just and the unjust. We only have to choose it and to live from that reality. And as we do that, we get a deeper level of integration, which in turn brings about a new level of surrender. Eventually, we get to the realization that since we are surrendering to someone, it must mean that we're still in separation, which means that on some level, even if we say we're one with God, we still believe God is somewhere else, because we're surrendering to something outside of us. active surrender to the will of God moving through us means freedom from the hamster wheel of action and reaction of sometimes good, sometimes bad outcomes. It means liberation, the end of suffering. It means a deeper love and acceptance of things as they are, a level of forgiveness that we couldn't have previously. Before, we thought ourselves superior, better than those who had wronged us, because we were willing to forgive their trespasses. Perhaps we were even willing to wish them well, because they're ignorant. They don't know any better. They are ruining their own lives and don't even know it. But now, you begin to see there is a lesson for you in that wrongdoing, in that in some ways it has served you, since you can grow in consciousness. You can become grateful for the event, and then even grateful to the person who did it, because they were the instrument for making you a more conscious person. And that consciousness expands again. So we know we're all in service to each other, whatever the appearance is. And we are all one life, and that life is the life of God. So an even deeper integration of the truth is coming about, which is that surrender has become meaningless, since you are that surrendered self. You are in union with divinity. And that, in essence, is the spiritual journey of a human being. And like all life, it's a circle. You start as a pure spirit without a dense material body, which then incarnates and becomes you in the body. To start off with, you're powerless, dependent on everyone around you for everything. Everyone else has power over you. You're a victim. As a human being, you grow, get more and more power. But with power also comes responsibility. You take responsibility first for yourself, then for others. You have control. You've become the creator of your reality from the perspective of being separate from spirit. But that cannot be sustained, since it's not the truth. The truth is, you are a spiritual being, just having an experience of a human personality. The sooner you surrender your human self to the spiritual self, which is you, you are not surrendering to some other being or power outside of you. You're just recognizing there is a part of you that knows everything, while you don't, and you're going to do your best to turn to that part of you and listen to its guidance rather than listening to what any other human being has to say. With that consciousness, your life from the outside looks the same as before. You get up in the morning, you get dressed, you do the various things life calls you to do, whether it's eat, go to school, work your job, drive your car, pray and meditate, go to church, dance, play or music, or paint. Whatever you're doing looks pretty much the same as you've always been doing. But the consciousness from which you're doing everything makes all the difference in both your life and your growth to the next level. You can cook a meal with the consciousness, I have to do this even when I don't want to and I don't like it. And how does that make you feel? Or you can cook a meal with the consciousness, this will make my family happy and content and able to get on with their life. How does that make you feel? You can go to work with the consciousness, I hate my job. Nobody appreciates me. They don't think like I do. They're all against me. Or you can go there with the consciousness, even if I don't like my job, the salary is serving me. There must be a reason for me being there. So I will bring the very best of who I am to it. I'll be helpful and patient and even joyful. And at least I'll be having a better day and becoming a better person. As you consistently practice this, soon you will notice the environment change as it entrains to your higher vibration. And if the environment can't change or won't, then you will be moved to another place which will match your new frequency. So our whole life is meant to be lived through grace, not struggle. The spirit within you never struggles, knows all, and can do anything. So it makes sense to surrender to a higher power and ask it to do through you what's not possible for just your personality to do. And it will still look like you are doing the things, but in your consciousness, you will know God is really doing it all while appearing in human form. So I hope I've made the whole idea of surrendering to a higher power a little clearer. That it's not giving you permission to sit and do nothing. In fact, it's quite the opposite. The more you surrender, the busier you become. And as usual, Nicole, I just looked at the clock and I don't have much time left. I have just 3 minutes.
Whoop, three minutes. Holy smoke, that went fast.
That did go fast. But these 3 minutes are going to be a little different because today everyone must be thinking about Thanksgiving celebration coming up. Even if you, as a Canadian, you've had your Thanksgiving, I think.
We have.
So, yeah. But you can have two. You can have the American one as well. Isn't that good?
Oh, I do.
So I want to extend all my wishes for it to be an occasion of joyful reconnection with family, the healing of any wounds that still remain, the strengthening of your love and acceptance of everyone just as they are, and bringing the happiest version of yourself to the table, not letting anyone have any influence on how you feel and how you show up. But in addition to this, and to this Thanksgiving, what I really want to celebrate today is you, Nicole. I want to celebrate you because this is the first birthday of my celebration with you and this radio station. I've had a year with you, and it's went like a flash.
It did. Wow. That's amazing. And on Thanksgiving.
Exactly. Isn't that fabulous?
Oh,
so I know you do very many things, but I think this radio that you have created must be just about the most important piece of your life's work.
Mm-hmm.
Because absolutely, you've created an amazing venue for bringing God and spirit to the attention of as wide an audience as possible. Through all those wonderful speakers that you have and the guests that come to share all their wisdom so that we can benefit from it. Because to me, spiritual growth is the most important part of our life. The only thing that's really worth striving for. So, Nicole, I thank you for your courage, for your trust and kindness in offering me this possibility to join you here. When I've never done anything like that before, truly you have taken, it must have been hard for you to get somebody who's never done any radio shows and somebody who you really didn't know anything about.
Well, I trust spirit, and look at you, you've been like a pro from day one. You know, it's not about having experience, it's about bringing your important, authentic, unique piece to the big mosaic, and you do it so beautifully.
Oh, thank you. But you, without you, I wouldn't have any place to do it, you see? So really, yeah. Thank you so, so much. I love and appreciate you, and thank you so much.
That's
and
awesome.
I'm going to light one big candle on this first birthday of our collaboration. I didn't think of bringing one here to light, but as soon as we're done, I will go and get one and light it.
Oh, I love that. And I love you so much. I'm just so glad that you're a part of News for the Soul. And thank goodness I found you, or Spirit found you, or whoever, whatever the upstairs team wants to be called today. But I'm very grateful for the gratitude and looking forward to speaking with you again next time.
Yes, yeah, in 2 weeks. It'll be before Christmas.
Yeah.
Isn't that something? I get to go to talk to you on Thanksgiving and right before Christmas.
I love it. All right. Yanya.
Oh, my love.
And thank God for you, and I look forward to our time together already.
Yes, indeed. I do too, Nicole. And thank you so much. I love you. I appreciate you. And thank you to all the listeners who are listening to this. If you may be listening while you're cooking your Thanksgiving dinner. Perhaps.
Beautiful. All right, Yanya. You have a great couple of weeks, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye, Nicole. And thank
bye
you.
Bye. Yanya Abe, all linked up at newsforthesoul.com. I love her to bits. Oh, my goodness. And speaking of loving shows, another mega successful show right behind her, Nisha Helmig is in the wings with scientific hand analysis ready to go. This is always very exciting logistically and otherwise. Stay put. We're going to get that started right now.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show. This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Hi, Uri. It's Nicole Whitney calling News for the Soul. Welcome to News for the Soul, Robert Allen.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to be here with you tonight.
Why are you here? We're talking to Carolyn Mace about Sacred Contracts, one of her many best-selling books. Welcome to the show, Greg Braden.
Well, good evening, Nicole. It's certainly a pleasure to hear your voice and a pleasure to be here tonight.
Welcome to the show, Stuart Wild.
Thank you very much.
John Kehoe, welcome to News for the Soul.
Hey, how are you?
Next up, Dr. David Morehouse.
I'm so glad that you called me because you are doing such an important work, because you are spreading a very positive message.
I was really moved by last week's show because we made a commitment to a worldwide event to try to change consciousness.
I'm feeling enormous energy around this show, just enormous. I really have to hand it to you, Nicole. You've created sort of a niche of amazing connections. It's just like the angels and the devatas that are like attracted to News for the Soul is amazing.
And we love News for the Soul!
Next on News for the Soul, it's time for Transformational Healing with Yanya. Yanya is a very powerful and intuitive energy healing practitioner. She's gifted at helping people to better handle their lives and to get a deeper understanding of their connection with spirits. Her experience is based on decades of study of many true teachings of the world, as well as her own search and practice of ancient wisdom, mystical traditions, and quantum physics. Let's welcome Yanya back to News for the Soul now.
She's here live. Yanya, how are you?
Oh, Nicole, I'm good. And how are you doing?
Woo! Coming out the other side. A lot of energy, a lot of stuff going on, the eclipse, oh my goodness, powerful stuff.
Powerful stuff, as you say. And I've been hearing all about Houston.
Oh, yeah.
And the hurricanes, and it's powerful. It's not only powerful for human beings, you know, it's powerful for the earth. Everything is being turned upside down, and we must really get with it. Because it's not ever going to go back to what it was.
Yeah.
We just have to do the best we can with what we have and know, absolutely know, that on some level it is all for our good. That's the most important thing. That's the only thing that will actually get us to where we want to be.
You know, and I know you talk about that a lot. It's the most important thing. It's easy to say, but hard to do sometimes, isn't it?
It's really hard to do. But, you know, you're not the only ones that are having these problems. Here in Switzerland, we've had a massive mudslide where the mud was like a river, actually. Thick river that went up to two-story houses were totally under mud. So it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And
why do you think it's everywhere?
Simply because the earth is shaking itself up and shaking out all the negativity that we as human beings have been generating for millions of years. Literally millions of years. And just as our bodies accept the emotions, the negative emotions, and process them so that they don't really impact us all that much, and it only comes out later when we can actually deal with it, in the same way the earth is processing all those emotions that it has kept for centuries and thousands of years, and now has come the time to clear it all up because we are moving into a different age. And negativity has no place in that age. No place at all. It's got to be cleared. So what we can do is just help with the clearing by sending love, by sending, well, I don't want to say appreciation because it's really hard to appreciate, you know, what we're getting, but sending love to those parts that are unhappy. There's nothing we can do about it. It's just like when a child has caught its hand in the door and is screaming. There's nothing you can do about it. You can just hold the child and love it. Love it until it's better. That's all we can do with all those energies that are coming up. Love them until they feel better.
That's well put. As always.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. What's your topic today, and how does it tie?
My topic today, well, it was healing. strangely enough, it was healing, because for a lot of people, energy healing doesn't have much meaning. Simply because energy is so intangible, it can't be seen, and we're used to dealing with visible symptoms. So the fact healing can be done without being physically present with a person is very mysterious. And I do get a lot of questions about that. So I thought today I would explain a little more. So first, we must realize that the word healing has many levels to it. And the most obvious level is physical. Healing a pain in the knee, or healing a cut in a finger, or healing a disease. That's what most people relate to. The next level is healing an emotional pain or discomfort. And that we also, on some level, understand when we say we want to heal a relationship with a partner or with a child, or we want to heal some personal issues like feeling unworthy, not good enough. Or we want to get rid of that lack of self-confidence or anxiety, stop feeling a failure and overwhelmed. And there's also a mental healing that we can go through. Like when we're mentally imbalanced, not to say completely crazy and in an institution, But just on the mental level, we can also heal false beliefs and limiting beliefs we have about how life works. And on that level, all of us, without a single exception, need healing. Mostly because we simply don't recognize that a lot of our beliefs are simply false. And unless we know they're false and want to change them, we will keep them forever. But of course, we all need healing on some, if not on all levels. If we're honest with ourselves, we see that. Our life is not yet perfect. But healing is never about getting rid of anything, never about removing anything, but it's always about transmuting and integrating. And that is changing one form of energy into another. That means changing a physical manifestation into another that feels better to us. Changing a perception into another view of the situation. Changing one belief into another that we prefer. Let's start with the traditional way of healing, which doctors use. And that's through administering medication and, in more extreme cases, surgery. All of that sometimes is still needed. Every healing modality has its place. But medication is only treating a symptom. When the symptom goes away, the patient is happy, but this only takes into account the dense, visible part of us, whether it's swallowing pills or cutting out some part of the body. We've completely forgotten the energetic part of us, our thoughts, perceptions, and beliefs. And all physical symptoms have started on the emotional and energetic levels. Science now estimates that 95% of the causes of any problem, whether physical, mental, or emotional, lies in that invisible, intangible energetic part. We know that all our ailments, even when temporarily cured, often come back, or some other symptom develops instead, because the root problem hasn't been addressed. The root cause has not been healed, and that lies in the invisible realms of energy, thoughts, and emotions. Science has now proved that everything is energy, whether it's intangible like thoughts or emotions, or dense, like our body, so it can be perceived by the physical senses. So if we look at our hand under a sufficiently high-powered microscope, it simply disappears, or you see a space. And space is not empty. It's filled with energy that holds it all together. It's also been called love energy. I'm sure you've heard the statement, nature abhors a vacuum. So there is no empty space in the whole of the universe, of which we are a part. That energy is God energy, source energy, love energy. And ignoring that greater part of us when we need a healing really makes no sense at all. We're told that if the whole universe had all the so-called empty space taken out so that all the solid bits were collapsed together, it would be the size of a green pea. And a quote from Thomas Edison says, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but will interest his patients in the care of the human frame, in diet, and in the cause and prevention of disease." And that was said not so long ago. Now we have many naturopaths, homeopaths, holistic and aromatherapy practitioners, energy healers, sound healers, you name it, we have it. And they are doing precisely what Thomas Edison predicted. And going even beyond that, people doing spiritual healing without the aid of plants, music, or diet. And for myself, I'm interested primarily in the causes and the prevention of disease. It would be so much more comfortable for us if we didn't get sick and didn't have to do all these sometimes painful and always time-consuming procedures to get well again. Even if you look at it logically, the body is wired to heal itself if we don't interfere with the process. When you cut your finger, the bleeding stops on its own very shortly. You clean the wound, put a band-aid on to stop dirt getting in, and forget about it. You don't moan and think, I'll bleed to death, I'll die soon. Not one fleeting thought goes to the idea it might never heal. You know that it will. And all on its own, without you doing anything. A more serious wound would need more care, or a different kind of care. But basically, our bodies are wired to heal themselves, and are wired to live for much longer than they currently do. Accounts in the scriptures of people like Methuselah, who lived over 800 years, were not fables. They're true. And whatever is true for one person can also be true for another if they want it and create the right conditions for it. And as for preventing diseases, since we know that at the basic level everything is energy, including our thoughts, and we now know that 95% of all diseases have at their root emotional causes, that our emotions are the result of our feelings, that our feelings are caused by our thoughts, then logically, if we just watch our thoughts so that as much as possible, they're in the high register of love, appreciation, gratitude, and joy, then the negative thoughts of frustration, resentment, or fear don't have as much room in your life to generate the disruptions in your body. Doesn't that make sense? You can't hold a thought of love at the same time as you hold a thought of fear. It just isn't possible. So the more time you give to thoughts of appreciation and gratitude, the less time there will be for thoughts of frustration and resentment. Doesn't that make sense? I myself started on the energy healing path because of a physical problem I developed that got completely resolved through first understanding the energetic cause for it, and second, doing what was necessary to remove the energetic cause. And that doing can take many different forms, depending on the unique path that you, as spirit, have designed for yourself. We can be going from the physical to metaphysical to esoteric or even completely woo stuff. So let me tell you a bit about my problem. One day I woke up with a pain in my right foot. I never knew bones could hurt, but a bone right in the middle was painful and kept getting more painful. Within a few days, the foot had doubled in size, bright red verging on violet, with the swelling creeping up above my ankles to almost my knee. I could no longer walk. Antibiotics made no difference, and I was hearing words of operation and amputation more and more often. But no one could really pin down what it was, and somewhere I knew there was no reasonable reason for it, because I hadn't done anything to it. Within a couple of weeks, I could no longer wear even a slipper. The pain was unbearable, and the skin looked like it would burst any moment. Apart from an operation, the only avenue left was turning to God. So I started asking questions. Where am I making wrong choices? What could I do that would heal the problem? What's the divine purpose of my life that I'm not seeing? Because by then, I was already on a spiritual path. I was active in a community, praying and meditating, while my family thought I had joined a cult. But that's quite another story. So days were going by in constant questioning, but my condition was getting progressively worse. Until one evening, the image of two shamans, two healers, dropped into my head, and I almost heard what they had said to me on two separate occasions. And those occasions had happened a few years back. And I had never met either of these people before. The first one, straight off the bat, told me I was a healer, which of course I heatedly denied. I'm ashamed to say I even laughed, because I wasn't a healer. And then he also told me why I was resisting it so much, and that it was my choice whether to honor the path or refuse it. And another medium a year or so later told me exactly the same thing, and my reaction was exactly the same. I never even remembered I had been told that before. And now, unable to walk, asking God for illumination as for the reasons for a problem, they both dropped into my awareness, together with the absolute knowing that I had been shown my path twice over, been told it in so many words at different times, but I had refused to go there, because I knew nothing about healing. And their words now resounded in my head. You are a healer. The absolute knowing that this was it, that this was what I was called to do, regardless of my ability or capability, that this was the reason for my problem. It was so strong, it couldn't be ignored or denied. I just knew the problem would not be resolved unless I listened. Instantly, what shot through my mind was, if you want me to do this, I will. But you have to bring me everything I need, because I don't even know where to start. It was an absolute and firm commitment, such as I had never done before. And with that, a sense of peace of all is well came over me, in spite of the pain and the added concern of having committed to something I had no idea how to accomplish. And I went to bed more peaceful than in a long while. In the morning, the pain was almost gone. The swelling was halfway down. And the next day, the leg looked and felt as if it had never had the slightest problem. And in the following week, the first step of what I had to do was brought to me on a platter. And this time, I accepted and acted on it. I went to a workshop, learning my first healing modality. So, if this could happen to me, I wanted to share with the world how physical problems could be helped, not only or necessarily through medical assistance. That there is a deeper spiritual truth to every physical appearance. And when that's addressed, what looks like a miracle can occur. But I also wanted to make it quite clear that addressing an issue is not only understanding it, but also doing whatever is necessary to right the actual specific situation. And in my case, righting the specific situation meant I had to be a healer. But it was physically impossible in that moment because I was incapacitated and not even in my own country. But I committed fully, and Spirit recognized how irrevocable that commitment was and arranged things so I could physically start the process. And that's what I did. 1 week later, when my very first step was shown to me. As I advanced on the path of healing, not only physical but emotional challenges, and learned ways to assist people, my practice grew almost in spite of me. Because I had committed to the God within me to be a healer, to fulfill my soul's purpose for this lifetime, step after step, I was given what was needed for that purpose. But also, just think, at that time, I was retired, 75 years old, and had never had anything to do with healing of any kind. I thought my active life was over, that I fully deserved to just live quietly, praying and meditating, which I loved to do. If then I'd been shown that I would start a business, have a website, write blogs, at that time, I didn't even know what the word meant, but it sounded to me quite nasty. If then I'd been shown that I would be on Facebook, create a program, make audios, write a book, which I have just written, speak on radio, which I'm doing right now, I would have totally gone to pieces. But only one small thing after another appeared, and I could deal with just one thing at a time. Speaking on radio would have freaked me out if I'd been asked to do that first. And I would have said, no, definitely not. That's not for me. Even now, I still have fear around it. But I have learned to face and get past it. Spirit knows what it's doing. Spirit is always kind and considerate, and so gave me only a little bit of a stretch each time. First, you're a healer. I could envisage that. It would be really nice if I could help people. Also, I had told God he would have to show me what to do, as I didn't know where to start. Google wasn't in my consciousness then, and to tell the truth, it still isn't. So God arranged it so that as soon as I got home, a friend called to say there was a workshop on energy healing offered not far from where I lived. And would I go with her? My heart sank down into my heels as I remembered my promise to Spirit, which I'd forgotten because of traveling back home after a 4-month absence. But I immediately said yes, because I had to follow through on my commitment. I had to keep my word. That's how it all started for me, and not everyone is supposed to be a healer. Some people need to start a business, paint pictures, play music, help handicapped or old people, be a life coach, create computer software. Everyone is here because of a need, or you wouldn't be alive. So you are necessary. You must fulfill the contract you signed up for when you were Spirit, even if now you don't quite remember what that contract was. Otherwise, your life will stagnate, shrivel, and contract. Having a bigger vision for your life is so important. bigger than just making it through the day or the week in a job you don't like. Bigger than just looking for the perfect partner or your dream house or healing constant health problems. You must find that thing you really want to do or were enthusiastic about at one time, but life got in the way. Maybe it's now time to try it again. That's the most important thing, doing what you love. In fact, if you're fully living for your vision, all the other issues seem to fade away, excuse me, become unimportant, or they get resolved almost miraculously. So the path I was originally shown by healing physical issues has evolved and expanded over time and touched different aspects of healing, emotional, mental, and spiritual, which is when we start to see that any challenge or issue is first and foremost the evidence of a deeper healing, our expansion into the awareness of us as spiritual beings. That's the deep healing that we all must to get to. We are spiritual beings. I realized our every desire is instantly answered by spirit, but it's delivered to the address of our soul's vibration. So our soul has expanded and embraced that new level, but as a personality, we're not there yet. And that gap between what our soul's vibration is and what our personality's vibration is shows up as all the various symptoms and difficulties we experience. When your frequency has aligned with your soul's frequency, all the quote-unquote things you so much want can be yours. So what we notice as an ailment or discomfort is proof that our soul has activated our desire, expanded into it, and our personality is still catching up with that expansion. We don't blame anyone or anything for our experience, even if it's an accident, least of all ourselves. The crisis is evidence that our consciousness is expanding and we must endeavor to see the potential that is hidden in it and accept the situation as a gift from spirit. We may not like it, but we accept it as an opportunity given by spirit to have the greatest expansion in the least possible time. If we can embrace the condition and acknowledge it's there for a reason, regardless of how painful, disturbing, or even life-threatening the actual experience is, if we can accept that this is the greatest gift the divine could ever give us, then through that heartfelt acceptance, it instantly becomes the will of the divine to heal it because it has nothing more to teach us. We are no longer judging it. The first really effective level of healing is through releasing the emotional causes of a problem. From our very early childhood, we've had experiences. We are told to stop making such a noise. Stop demanding that cookie or ice cream. You're just too much. It's not nice to fight with your little sister or brother. And all done by parents with good intentions to make their child behave, be accepted in society, when all the child is doing is expressing the way they're feeling in this moment, expressing their emotions. The child obeys, stops doing whatever, but feels put down, unloved, rejected, unsafe, that the world is against them. And that creates all those shadows. In addition to the emotion getting stuck in the body because it's suppressed and can't move. Emotions are meant to move. And eventually, when they can move, they release. And emotions do have a physical mass about the size of an orange or a grapefruit. It can be felt when it comes to the surface to be released. So when that emotion or energy in motion gets stuck in the body because it's not expressed and not allowed to move, it impacts the tissues around it and over time creates pain or a problem, which then we try to resolve by taking a pill. That removes the symptom, but not the cause, which is that stuck emotion which continues to press on a muscle or block a meridian or whatever it's doing, and then some other pain starts somewhere else. So we go and take another pill for the next problem, and that goes on and on. You must know it. It's always happening. So, for an example, let's say you were angry and acting out when 8 years old, and your mother told you to stop that, it's not nice. You stuffed it, and it got lodged in your, You stuffed it, and it got lodged in your knee. Now, you're 50, or whatever, and your knee is giving you trouble. You completely forgot the incident, but your 95% subconscious knows exactly what happened, when, and why your knee is hurting. If you can get the right information from your subconscious, then you bring that anger up into your consciousness, to the surface of the body. It can't be released where it's buried deep down. And once it's up on the surface, you release it. There may be more than one emotion there. Keep asking and keep releasing until there are no more left. Then the energetic cause of the knee problem is gone. The energetic body comes back into balance, and over a little time, the physical body can also come back into a healthy state. Sometimes it's immediate. Mostly, it takes a little bit of time. So let me illustrate that with a dental issue I had a short time after I started energy healing. I was forever going to the dentist with an infection of one particular tooth and getting antibiotics for it. It worked, it got better for a while, and then started up again, so more antibiotics were needed. And that went on for more than a year, when I decided to really take the time to do emotional healing on myself. As you can gather, I'm not great at taking time for myself, for healing my own problems. But then I was truly fed up with the situation. So next time I felt the tooth becoming painful, instead of going to the dentist, I started finding the emotions and consciously releasing them, as many as I could in any one sitting. And after a few times, there was a little bit of improvement. Every few days, I would redo a session, and there was more improvement. Until after a month or so, I didn't feel the tooth anymore. I thought that was it. Stopped working on it. A week or two later, it started hurting again. More layers of emotions were coming up to be released. And every time, the period of having no pain would lengthen. Until after 3 or 4 months, the pain just didn't come back. Now, I think it must be 5 or 6 years that I've had no pain and no infection at all in that tooth, or any other tooth for that matter. And the most mind-boggling about, the most mind-boggling thing about it all is that I must have released 800 to 1,000 stuck emotions over these months. At a certain point, when I got to 600, I stopped counting. And I was working on only one small spot under one particular tooth. Can you imagine? It's mind-boggling to me. So often I find that a client's physical issue can be dramatically improved or even resolved by clearing trapped emotions. Even if sometimes becoming aware of the reason for that emotion is necessary before it can be released. Like for one client I had, her emotion was one of abandonment, and she kept saying, "That's not possible. I was never abandoned. I'm happy in my marriage. My kids are fine. My parents love me." But the emotion would not release. So we kept digging deeper. And finally I said, "Look back about 10, 12 years. Did anything happen then that was not usual or that was painful?" And she thought about it and said, "I was then living in that other place. Oh yeah, and I had a dog and the dog died. Could that be it?" So we tested it and that was exactly it. And then she remembered that not only was she sad, but did feel abandoned by her pet. After that, the emotion released very easily. And there are also imbalances we have that don't show up at all in a physical way. So they're undetectable by traditional medicine, scans or whatever. But they do impact us, sometimes severely, on the emotional and mental level. This is called a heart wall, and we start building it usually in childhood when a heart has been hurt in some way by a perceived lack of love, a perceived rejection, a perceived emotional attack. And I say perceived because the rejection or lack of love is almost never real. But the three-year-old who is told to go to their room if they want to play their drum doesn't have the understanding of an adult and will interpret that as a lack of love or a lack of appreciation for a skill and a new ability they have just developed. And so their heart has been hurt. And the subconscious will want to protect that heart at all costs. So start to build a wall around it that will not let any more hurt reach that heart. The subconscious is very logical. It knows that a wall has to be built of something. And there is nothing extra in the body that can be taken to build that wall without damaging a person. We need every single part of us. And so it turns to the only thing that is extra, and that is trapped emotions that have been added to the body. So that is how a heart wall is built. But what happens is, it not only protects the heart from being attacked from the outside, but it also prevents your legitimate emotions of love, appreciation, approval, validation, or whatever, to be sent to others without being distorted by the negative emotions of anger, sadness, unworthiness, or guilt, or fear that is making up that heart wall. The net result is, just to simplify, that your feelings of love, of being capable, confident, appreciative, can't exteriorize in their pure expression, but get distorted, so may not be received as they were intended. And the pure feelings of love and appreciation for others, of others, for you, can't get to you without being distorted by that same heart wall. And now you can't figure out why things don't work out, why it seems you're blocked everywhere in what you want to accomplish, why you can't find the love of your life, why you self-sabotage, why you can't seem to either get or hold down a job. But once your heart wall has been removed, it seems like life has all of a sudden completely turned around. When I started to release my heart wall, and it was a really sick one, way more than I have ever found in any client, and that took months of regular work, too. And then, all of a sudden, new clients started showing up seemingly from nowhere. Because at that time, I didn't have a website, I wasn't on Facebook, I didn't advertise. I just had an email where people could contact me. And clients were just sharing my email with their friends and relatives who needed help. So these are a few examples of how energy healing works. And it doesn't have to be done by the laying of hands or being physically present with a person, although it can be done that way. And it can also be done with the photo of a person. Since energy is everywhere and everything, you are energetically connected with everyone and everything. And it only requires your attention, intention, and full awareness of knowing the truth of this. Not just intellectually believing, but really knowing at such a deep level that it can't be shaken by any appearance to the contrary. In the same way as you know that the sun will rise again in the morning, even if everyone tells you that it might not come back after it disappears at night. Even if next morning the sky is covered with clouds and there is no vestige of the sun anywhere, you know it's there and can't be swayed by any appearance. Just as you know that the earth is round, not flat, as was believed by humanity a few hundred years ago. And even if you sometimes act as if it was flat, because it's just more convenient, you still believe and know the earth is round. When you're building a doghouse in your backyard, you make your measurements and calculate your angles as if the earth was flat, because on the scale of a doghouse, it makes no difference. But you still know the truth and can't be shaken out of it. Galileo, who to save his life had to recant his findings proving the earth was round, and spent his last years under house arrest, never let go of his knowing the truth, even when his words were saying the opposite. So that's the kind of knowing we have to have when doing energy healing and spiritual healing. But while we're holding that space of absolutely knowing the truth, every person must do the healing for themselves, because we're all individually responsible for our own lives. Each individual must consciously choose to align with all that their spirit is, to learn what they need to know from the experience they're having. Every challenge and every issue we have is only there to make us aware of where we're not being, thinking, and acting like our spirit would under those circumstances. And as we make corrections in our thoughts and beliefs to the best of our ability, the symptoms can start diminishing and disappearing. So the solutions lie within each problem. And when we really don't know the deeper reason, beyond the surface reason of an accident or our investments failing, whatever your current issue is, we must turn to Spirit and ask with great sincerity. As we have already been told more than 2,000 years ago, ask and you shall receive. Knock and it will be opened unto you. I think I'm paraphrasing a little, but you get the meaning. We've known about this for thousands of years, but are we truly and sincerely doing it with every issue we have? I think not. We first turn to just doing on the material level. And only when we run out of options do we turn to the all-powerful and all-knowing soul and start asking. So when you start having financial problems, what's the lesson you have to learn from that? Maybe realize that as an expression, an emanation of Spirit, you have all its abundance in potential and that you must activate it. Maybe realize that you must first turn to that source of infinite abundance with recognition and gratitude for its gifts before you start doing things in the outer world to attract money to yourself. The answer will be different for each person, but it's there if you look for it. And when I really didn't know what to do when in danger of losing my leg, and no one knew how to fix the problem, I was driven to ask with sincerity and was given the answer, shown what I had to do to change and change in my life. That was nothing to do with healing my leg. And I had to commit to doing it. And my commitment was absolutely irrevocable. Spirit knows everything. Spirit knew the level of my commitment, so the healing could be done almost instantly. Had the level of my commitment been less, maybe I would have been given the chance to prove I meant it. So maybe just had an improvement of my condition until I actually took a course. Nobody ever knows what would have happened if this or if that. But what does happen is meant to for our highest good. And that doesn't necessarily mean our material good, although it can. But we must first believe and know it for it to work. Also, there is often a symbolic meaning to a challenge. Problems with feet or legs symbolize not advancing in life, not moving forward with your soul purpose. And right leg problems are more specifically connected with our own choices rather than with random events. Also, there's usually a progression. I've had several so-called accidents before, always involving my legs. A twisted ankle, a broken toe, a fall that dislocated my knee, finally a broken hip. But I was not aware enough to look for the deeper cause for all those accidents. And so, for true healing to occur, we must work both on our thoughts, feelings, and beliefs, and sometimes also on the physical body. Just working on the physical body is never enough. Working on changing our limiting and negative thoughts, feelings, and beliefs is enough, but it takes time to change a belief. And not to mention that some of our beliefs are unconscious, meaning we don't even know we have them. So how can we ever change them? But when we work on both the physical and the mental together, then results show up much faster. So I hope this has been valuable to you and has shed light on what energy healing is about. But don't forget, you have to actually put what you learn into practice for it to work for you. So I would ask you to just take one thing you have learned or realized during this time today and really implement it in your life on a consistent basis. And that is how you can begin healing your own body and your life. Determination and consistency will bring you the results you desire. And if you're helped by a professional, they do come much faster. After all, when you were learning to read and write, did you just try it for a few days, a week or two, and then forgot, got interested in something else, just remembered sporadically to write your name? And when you did, you'd forgotten how it went and had to start from scratch again. No way. Even if you didn't feel like it, your parents or your teacher made you do it every day, consistently. Maybe not on Saturdays and Sundays, but it was consistent. Whether you liked it or not, whether you did it well or not, you still had to do it until you got better at it, you got more confident you could do it, then you got more competent, and that again made you more confident. But it was consistent practice for 2 years or more before you could actually read and write with confidence. And the same holds true here. Whatever you choose to practice, commit to doing it every day with full dedication for at least 3 months, or like writing, for a year or two. And I guarantee it will move you forward and it will work. Oh my goodness, Nicole, I have so much enjoyed talking to you about this healing, because I'm sure it's going to be very illuminating and so helpful to a lot of your listeners.
I love the way you articulate the path and the breadcrumb trail, and I so relate to so much of what you said. And those listening, it's always a great gift when you're here live with us, Yanya. You know what? You've got 4 minutes to the top, so we want to do some shameless self-promotion.
Whoa. Yeah, I did not. Okay, no, I will only take 1 minute. I'll only take 1 minute because I really wanted to tell you that my book, Your Infinite Power, is out. It's out on Amazon, and I couldn't be more delighted and excited. And I've already had people buying it. That's incredible because I have not even advertised it anywhere except here on your News for the Soul. So maybe it's some of the listeners that have already bought it. But, so I'm really excited. And even if it has meant a lot of intense work in the last 2 years, I am really confident it will assist so many in understanding what life is really about and making it work for them better than it ever has. So let me give you a link that you can use for ordering your copy. And it's quite simple. It's http://bit.ly/book-yanya. So to spell it out, you know how to do http://. Then it's brother infinity Thomas dot London yellow dash book, like a book, and Yanya, like my name, Jania. So if you really want to improve your life by designing it, not living it by default, read that book. So how That was only a minute or two, wasn't it?
It was. And you know, I got an email just while you were doing that, and I had a little bit of a shock moment here. I just found out that Louise Hay has passed away this morning.
That what?
Louise Hay.
Oh, my goodness.
Just this morning.
Oh, my goodness.
Shocking. Wow.
God bless Louise Hay. God bless her.
Mm-hmm.
She has done so much.
Yes.
I think so many people are so grateful for her life, for everything she has done.
I believe so. She's created one of the early pioneers of a lot of this work. Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you know how old she was?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm still in stunned mode. I'll get more information as we go, but just found out just now that happened just this morning.
Whoa. Oh, gosh. Louise. Oh, I love you so much, Louise. I have read her books. I have studied her stuff. She's amazing. She's just amazing.
Oh, I'd say I'm getting more information. She was 90, passed in her sleep, natural causes.
Yeah. Well, she has had a really full life, and now she has moved on to being of even more help to even more people, even in a different way, but she will absolutely keep up helping the planet now, maybe on a planetary level.
Yeah, she's gone on to her next level of mission and changed many
lives.
So, wow, that was...
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that. That was surprising. My goodness.
Oh my goodness.
But that's the energies, the massive changes and shifts, and we're all in it right now, and that's a good example.
It's a good example that whatever happens is for our highest evolution, and I know it's for hers. I know she's happy. She's just looking back on her life, looking at all of us and saying, I have helped you, now I can help so many more.
Yes, beautifully put. Wow. Well, what an interesting note to leave the show on. But it does go full circle back to where we started. So much love to you, Yanya. I'm already looking forward to next time, as always. And you take care.
You take care, too. Thank you, Nicole. I love you so much. God bless.
I love you, too. Yanya, Transformational Healing, here on News for the Soul, Alternate Wednesdays. You don't want to miss any of Yanya's shows. If you have, go to her archives. They're all free all the time, newsforthesoul.com.
Call in to live News for the Soul shows daily for intuitive coaching, readings, numerology, leading-edge health information.
The News for the Soul radio network airs daily, and our archives are always totally free. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Next on News for the Soul, it's time for Transformational Healing with Yanya. Yanya is a very powerful and intuitive energy healing practitioner. She's gifted at helping people to better handle their lives and to get a deeper understanding of their connection with spirits. Her experience is based on decades of study of many true teachings of the world, as well as her own search and practice of ancient wisdom, mystical traditions, and quantum physics. Let's welcome Yanya back to News for the Soul now.
Hello again and welcome. Today I would like to explore with you how to find your true calling in life, because so often people come to me with either a problem they're encountering or with just a desire to improve their life. But whatever it is, I find that their one underlying issue is the lack of a clear vision for their life. The one main question seems to be, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with my life. I feel there is more than I'm called to do, but I really have so many responsibilities, I don't have time for anything else. Or they say, if only I could solve this problem I have with my spouse, my kids, my job, my health, whatever it is, then I could really start thinking of my true purpose. Or maybe they even know what it is, but don't know how to achieve it, don't know how to connect with the spirit within. They feel stuck where they are, without a way out, and it's really not a comfortable place to be. But what's really going on with whatever dissatisfaction we're feeling is that our identification is with our body and our personality, and we've not truly accepted that we are a spirit who has decided to live a human experience. We've heard that so many times, both from our religious upbringing and from the many spiritual teachers we have listened to, that it has become a sort of background noise. But we have not embodied that truth. We're not living as if we really believed it. We may say we believe it, but our actions are proving to us that's not the case. How we act is showing us what we really believe. So the first principle and premise is that there is an all-powerful spirit underlying all visible manifestation, which is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. And that means it is all power. So logically, there is no power other than it. That it is all knowledge. So again, logically, there is no knowledge outside of it. And omnipresent means that it's present everywhere. So again, logically, it is in everything you see and also in you. It's in you and everywhere around you as well. And so nothing exists outside of that spirit. Have we ever truly, deeply looked at what that entails? I don't think so. Or we wouldn't be in the state that we are in. Like, even if we consider our human life, which is the relative realm of existence, we're always expressing some particular identification. We are a mother or a father, and a brother or sister, and a child, an employee, a boss, a teacher, a musician, engineer, or whatever else. And we act in accordance with those various aspects of our personality at different times. But underlying all those human aspects, there is the spiritual being we are, as we've just discovered through omnipresence, which is the absolute realm of existence where everything is all at once. And it's perfect, whole and complete. So if it is, it cannot not be. So if in the relative world you can be certain aspects and not others, like you may be a mother and a daughter and a teacher and an artist, expressing those aspects at different times, but you're not a father, a brother, or an engineer. As spirit, you have all aspects in potential. And as incarnated spirit, you bring into visible manifestation some of those aspects. Now that we've grown up and are not a child anymore, we do get called to express more or different qualities than we could as babies or teenagers, because spirit incarnated in us with an agenda. And so, every human being has, at their core, the same purpose. And that is to manifest the underlying spiritual reality of life, which is all goodness, wholeness, and perfection. We have subdivided that oneness, which spirit is, into different qualities because of being in time and space, where two things cannot exist at the same time in the same space. And we call those things love, trust, peace, harmony, health, or abundance. So we are here to manifest that, because that's the nature of reality. Just as the nature of the sun is to shine, and the nature of water is to be wet, and they're always expressing their true nature, regardless of their surroundings. And so, we must also express our true nature of goodness and wholeness. That's what it means to manifest the glory of God, as it says in the scriptures. But how we do that is up to us. And in order to do that, we must be consciously connected to that spiritual, invisible, and underlying reality. So that's why we must have the fundamental intention to awaken to the ultimate reality. And then have a practice through prayer and meditation and habits of thinking, feeling, being, and doing, in that order, so as to bring into our awareness as often as possible that we truly are spirit and that our life is just an experience spirit is having. All the great masters and avatars that have come from time to time to lift humanity out of their material perception of life, we're teaching the principle that the kingdom of heaven, or nirvana, lies within us, that we need to shift our perception to knowing we are spirit or life, and not be overly attached to the physical things that are here one moment and can disappear in the next. Those masters were never teaching anything about improving the human conditions of life, like getting a better job, healing a disease, or getting the perfect partner or soulmate. As Jesus said, all these things shall be added unto you. But we've made the mistake of thinking that they will just be given to us as a present from heaven. No, not at all. Nothing can ever come to us. It must come through us as a function of first our belief that we truly have all that spirit has, the health, the abundance, the joy, the peace, the love, the harmony, or whatever. And that belief, through practicing it consistently and in the face of every appearance to the contrary, becomes a knowing. Only when we really know that the disease we have does not exist in the reality of spirit can that disease be instantly dissolved. That is how Jesus healed, by knowing the spiritual truth about himself first, embodying it, and then that truth radiated to all within his consciousness, if they were willing to accept it. For us, subconsciously, we may not be ready to heal, however much we say it with our words. That's why Jesus said to the man who was paralyzed, "Do you want to be healed?" He saw through the psychology of the man, who derived certain benefits from his disability, people would go by and pity him. Things would be done for him. He didn't have to take responsibility for his life. But when he answered, "Yes, Master," that was taking responsibility for his own life. It was the end of victimhood. And so, when Jesus said, "Pick up your bed and walk," he got up and walked. And the same holds true for all of us. When we decide to fully step into who we really are, miracles can happen. In the same way, only when we truly know how that lack of finances which appears on our bank account cannot be true of the spirit which we are, which has all abundance, including money. Can that money be brought to us through some external means that we cannot even imagine right now? Because Spirit, God, can only act in this world through some physical agent, some person or thing. And if a lack of finances cannot be true for Spirit, it cannot be true for me, since I am that Spirit. That knowing will bring insights we've not had access to before. And then action will allow what we need to be brought to us. Do you see how everything is always brought back to one simple truth, that we are spirit, but must know it in order to experience it? The truth is always very simple, but it's really difficult for us to internalize it and live from it. And there is a distinction between believing and knowing that we don't always make. First, we have certain filters in our minds, either from the collective consciousness of humanity that believed certain things for thousands of years, or from being told how things are from people in authority when we were children. Those don't allow us to see truth. We accepted what we were told at face value and lived as if that was true. And so it became true for us in our experience. We only have to look at some of the beliefs held in the Middle Ages by humanity at large, like the belief that the Earth was a flat disk and the center of our solar system. Ridiculous as that now seems, that was the belief held by most people in what we call the Dark Ages, even the Roman Catholic Church authorities. So when Galileo, an astronomer and a mathematician, took up and championed Copernicus's theory of the sun being the center of our solar system, he was accused of heresy by the Inquisition, was tried, found guilty, and sentenced to death unless he publicly recanted. In order to save his life, he did recant, saying he had made a mistake and that it wasn't true. But of course he knew, deep down, that there was no mistake. He spent the rest of his life under house arrest, but his idea, since it was truth, persisted and was gradually taken up by more and more people until it became the officially accepted view. It took time to change the collective belief of humanity from Copernicus in the 14th century to Galileo in the 16th, and even more time after that. But truth always wins in the end. when it comes to our individual beliefs, it doesn't take centuries, of course, but it still takes time, sometimes most of our life. It can take much less time if we're supported in the new belief we want to have by the people we have in our lives, the conversations we have, the books we read, the kind of TV we watch, and the activities we engage in. Like, for example, if you were raised in a family that never had enough money or that didn't show you enough love and validation, or if they believed they inherited the disease their mother has, and then, as you grew up, you started meeting people who had other beliefs and decided life would feel much better if you believed that you were loved and supported and abundant and could create the life you wanted. So your intention now is to believe in the goodness and health and wealth and support of life. And you start paying attention to where that's manifested, and you start seeing more and more evidence of that around you. And then something shows up in your life that you really wanted, like a romantic relationship or an inheritance from a long-lost uncle just when you needed the money. Or you get an insight to do something and it turns out really well. And now you say, wow, this really works. I believe that I'm supported and loved. And you think that now you've got it. But you haven't yet, because that's just the beginning of your journey into really knowing it. That insight or windfall or situation is the seed that has been planted and is just beginning to sprout. But unless you feed it and water it and weed it, which means begin to practice it daily, mentally and emotionally, verbally and physically, and also by not allowing the weeds of doubt, fear, and disbelief to take root. Then, after a while, you start really having faith that it's real. You feel the joy and the energy. You get excited about moving forward in your life. And you're now believing it. But belief is just a placeholder for true knowing. Now your work is to walk your talk. So you have to act as if you were loved and fully supported and live your life from that belief. And we only know that we know something versus just believing it when nothing, no adverse situation can shake us out of that knowing. Because beliefs can be changed. They're relative. Knowing is an absolute quality and cannot be changed. Once you know something, you can't unknow it. You can forget it on the surface level. You can act counter to it, which brings pain and frustration, but you can't unknow it. For example, you know that the sun is always there, shining. You know that even when it disappears at night, it will be there again the next morning. Even when next morning the sky is completely obscured by clouds and it's dark, you can't be shaken out of your knowing that the sun is there. Even if the clouds persist for days, you still know it. A small child doesn't know that. That's why children resist going to bed at night, they don't know that tomorrow will be there again to play and have fun. You tell them that time and time again, and bit by bit, they start believing you, just tentatively at first. Then their belief gets reinforced, becomes stronger and stronger, and as they grow, more proof is provided until they finally know it. And in ancient times, primitive people would make up all kinds of stories and rituals to try and get the sun to come back again. And they had other rituals to get the flowers and the fruit to eventually come back again in the spring. But we never doubt or get afraid that the sun won't come back, or that the spring will never come again. We now absolutely know it. Another example is when a child can't go to sleep, because as soon as the light is out, they think there are monsters in the closet or under the bed. So they call to you to come and rescue them from the monsters in the room. You know there are no monsters. So you walk into the room unafraid. And no matter how much they scream and cry, you will never start to doubt whether there are monsters or not, okay? But as a good parent, you will hold them and rock them and maybe tell them that you're not afraid of the monsters. And so you will open the closet door and let them see that there are no monsters there. And you will look under the bed to see if the monsters are there. And if not, then they also can look, because there are no monsters there. But even going through all of this, you never, ever think there are monsters, right? You can't be shaken out of your knowing. When on the spiritual journey of trying to believe what our eyes or ears don't show us, we keep trying to convince ourselves we know it. Like, I know I'm abundant. I know that God is with me and supporting me. But, and it's not really working, and we don't know why. The reason is that it's just an intellectual belief that has not been shored up by our acting as if what we're thinking and saying is true. We may believe it intellectually, but it has not been turned into an absolutely firm and unshakable knowing, regardless of what outer appearances tell us. We should never have to convince ourselves that we know something. The proof lies in our absolutely unbreakable knowing. And that's a feeling you have inside of yourself, which does not have to be put into words, but just acted on. When you're standing on the edge of a cliff, you know that if you take just one step more, you will fall into the abyss. You know it, and the proof of that is in the action you take or don't take, which is congruent with your knowing. Here, you don't take that last step forward. So you want to very honestly look at the actions you are taking in your everyday life and ask, am I thinking the thoughts of a person who knows that all there is the goodness and abundance of God, that all my needs are met, that there is only love, health, and joy? Am I feeling the feelings of a person who knows that? Am I talking about things in a way that a person who knows that would? Am I acting in a way a person who knows that would? We are now primarily thinking of the consciousness you have and from which you are taking action. And that doesn't mean you go and spend money you don't have and run up a credit card debt. That's being stupid. But what it does mean is starting to be really honest with ourselves and noticing when our thoughts go into doubt, fear, or lack. Noticing how our conversations go into what's wrong with us. With our health, with our friends, with the economy, with the government, rather than into what's good and working well in life. Noticing where we want to take some action, but we don't, because we can't afford it. Like if we want to be in better health and buy organic food and vegetables, but they're so much more expensive. A financially abundant person would buy the organic produce, and so far you haven't. Your actions are not in alignment with those of an abundant person. Remember that in order to manifest the higher reality you want, your thinking, feeling, being, and doing aspects must all be congruent. And so now, to bring yourself into alignment with spirit, you buy the organic produce, but a little less of it, so you don't actually spend more if you can't afford it. Or you really want to buy a program that will allow you to anchor a higher consciousness, or become more confident, or manifest more money, but it's too expensive, and you give up on it. You acquiesce to your ego, which is invested in keeping you the same, in not letting you grow, because fast change to the ego spells death. The ego was given us for a very good reason, to protect the human race from dying out, because physically we were so much weaker than the animals populating the earth in the beginning. So it was the ego that gave us the possibility of remembering where there were potential dangers and how to evade them. And it's done its job really well, since we're still here in the millions. It's still trying to protect us, because that is its job. But now, it's in effect preventing us from progressing to the next phase of our evolution as spiritual beings. At this point in our evolution, we must override the ego, which thinks change is dangerous. Now, change into a higher consciousness is absolutely vital and necessary if we are to survive on the earth, which is going into the fifth dimension. In fact, we're told that it's already in the fifth dimension, which is spiritual and in unity consciousness. And unless we catch up and start expressing more oneness, more cooperation, more love and allowance, those of us that want to stay in the old materialistic view of an eye for an eye will have to be dragged, kicking and screaming, into a new understanding of life. While those of us who are willing to change ourselves through prayer and meditation and connection to spirit and doing what we deeply know is our calling to help the world on its ascension path, can do it with ease and grace and helped by spirit. It will not always be easy, but if we're willing to recognize our fear, procrastination, and unwillingness to pay for a program that really would help in moving us forward in a bigger way, whatever that is, if we're willing to recognize that it's the ego misguidedly trying to protect us from what it thinks will be our death, then we can become resourceful in finding ways to invest in ourselves, live a bigger, more expanded, and ultimately a happier life, because we will be living our soul's purpose, which is to manifest God's glory into the material world. So we always have to be doing the inner work without forgetting that outer work is also necessary, since we live in a material world and spirit can only do through us what we want to achieve. Feel what it would feel like to have that thing you really want, to be really abundant, to have a thriving business, to be a part of divinity, and start living as if it was really true. Buying that organic produce, going into nature where you feel God in the trees, in the flowers, and the grass under your feet, and bring that vibration back to your small and maybe disorderly house, and start making it as nice and tidy as you can. And then you sit and meditate and pray and affirm, letting go of the doubts and limiting thoughts that arise, knowing you are the manifester of the life you really want through your knowing and your action towards it. And one day, you find that your need for the recognition of others, or your need for a different job or a different house, is no longer there, because you are content and at peace just as you are. That's the work I did when I wanted the apartment I lived in to be my own. And for me, it also involved forgiveness. I had tried to forgive honestly and sincerely for years with no result. But I kept on getting new insights into what forgiveness really was, how to approach it, how to start blessing and sincerely wishing happiness and well-being for all the people concerned. Until one day I actually saw how they were not my enemies, but my allies. How they were unknowingly helping me in my spiritual journey by being objectionable, which was causing me to turn to my presence more than I ever would have otherwise. And the sincerity of my feelings of goodwill was such that I no longer needed ownership of the house. I had everything I could wish for in those feelings. And very shortly after that, within a few weeks, what I no longer needed was offered to me and officially signed within a couple of months. The lesson here is that when you absolutely want something, that feeling is coming from a place of not having it. And as soon as you rise into the feeling of already having everything you can possibly want because of your connection with the divine, where everything is, the feeling of wanting is replaced with, wouldn't it be nice if? And then that thing can come into your reality. You're not pushing it away with the feeling of, I don't have it. Your feeling allows the thing into your consciousness. And then you have to physically do what's required to lower it even further into your reality. That's the manifestation. And if you think your manifestation skills are broken, that's never true, because we are all already manifesting. And we do that because that's the makeup of who we are. Every choice we make, and we make thousands every day, manifests something. And we manifest from the level of our vibration, meaning from our beliefs, our thoughts, our words, and all that we do. We manifest from our vibrational level, and we've learned different ways of influencing life around us. Our beliefs are what create most of what we experience right now in life. It's who we believe we are, how we believe the world functions, what we believe we will experience, and most of our beliefs are at a less than conscious level. So they are operating in that subconscious level of creation within our being. And some of our beliefs are not even ours. They come from our parents, teachers, friends, family, and we have never questioned them. Our beliefs influence our experiences and create the framework which holds in place our limits and our expectations. But we've learned various ways in which to influence the way our life is, like affirmations, reciting a sentence for something that we want to have in our life. For example, I am peace, I am happiness, I am joy, I am financially abundant, and then like feeling as if we already had it, feeling the emotion of what it would be like if we already had that. We've learned prayer and learned to pray as if we had already received it. We have learned gratitude. And by giving gratitude in our life, we open doorways wide for more to flow to us. The more gratitude we have, the more gifts can come to us. These are all powerful ways of manifesting. They all are effective at the vibration that we're at right now. And they are influenced by who we are and what we believe and how we respond to life around us. But since we live 95% of our time in the subconscious, where we have downloaded programs from our parents, teachers, and other people in the first 7 years of our life, and our choices are made by default from these programs, which are not even ours and may not be true. Of the 5% of our time remaining, only a small fraction is spent on conscious manifesting. So that's why we manifest unwanted things. So we must reprogram ourselves with the beliefs and things we want to have. We do that through having that intention and then turning our attention only to the things we want to believe in rather than to the things we were programmed with in our childhood when we got the message that life is hard, that there is never enough money, that there is conflict and war, so we must protect ourselves, that someone is always out to get us, that we're not good enough or talented enough, that we never get to do what we want, or whatever negative belief is that you downloaded, you must now consciously and consistently turn away from and start affirming and believing the contrary. Because the spiritual truth is that you are one with God and an expression of divinity. So have all that God has. And therefore, you are totally supported, totally looked after, protected, safe and secure, and you can never be separated from the divine. That you live in a world that is for you, where you're loved and valued and respected. You must see who you really are, a worthy, abundant and successful expression of God into the material world. All of life is on your side, but you must be on your own side too, by knowing the truth, thinking and articulating the truth, and living as if it was true. When you're anchored in that, when nothing can shake you out of that belief, it becomes a knowing. And as the saying goes, one with God is a majority, and your life will never be the same again. And whenever you're in that place of deep connection and knowing the truth, ask yourself, what do I really want to do with my life? What's the thing that will bring me the greatest joy and would also benefit those around me? Whether they're family, friends, acquaintances, larger groups, or even the world at large. Do you want to write, to sing, to paint, to cook, to do computer programming, to coach, create programs, speak online, present workshops, work with nature, with photography, sewing, whatever it is? There must be things you really would love to do. And if you are the sort of person who says, I have so many things I want to do that I don't know which to choose, you must prioritize them by how important and resonant they are for you. Make a list. Number them from 1 to 10. Look at them carefully. Feel into each one. And cross out those that you can live without. Until your list is down to 2 things. It doesn't mean you never do all the others you have crossed out. It just means they become a hobby in your free time. And now, which of these 2 is the one that if you couldn't do it, it would feel like you would literally die? That you could never be happy again. And when you've got it, you must decide this is the one you must implement now. And that might be difficult for you, since so far you have not been deciding and sticking to your decision. You must decide and commit to giving it your all for at least a year to 18 months. Your time, your attention, your resources, your full commitment to making it work. Now that you have that one thing that you really want to develop, you know what you truly want to do in life. And since it's your joy and your passion, then that's also what your soul wishes you to express. Because all it wants is for you to be happy. So feel into the vision of you fully feeling it, being a great success at it, everyone applauding you, admiring your achievements, your talent, your wisdom, living in a beautiful home, having your family and friends around you to support you. Make it as detailed and as vibrant as you can. Describe your surroundings. Who are the people you would be doing it with? Who are the people you would be doing it for? Would you be speaking, coaching, healing, creating programs, writing, starting a business, cooking, painting? Would you add dancing or music to whatever you're creating? Become really clear on the what and what it would look like. The how right now is not important. It will kill your vision if it's not really anchored within you. Who are you becoming in that vision? Which soul qualities are you expressing as that brilliant and successful person in your vision? What are your habits of thinking when you're living your vision? Are you predominantly looking at what's working rather than at what's lacking? Are you feeling confident, secure, expansive, free and fulfilled, or powerful? And how are you being habitually in that vision? Are you being outgoing, generous, trusting, or helpful? Make a list of all those qualities and see which ones are not presently in your life or not expressed enough. And those are the aspects of your personality that you must have if the vision is to become real. Now, you must start practicing them in your everyday life to the best of your ability. Take them one at a time and practice one for a few days, then move to the next one. They must become habits, the way you habitually respond to life, even in the midst of challenges. And notice how you change and the life around you changes as you embody those qualities that were either missing or not strong enough. Your life will start expanding, and when you see a new opportunity arise, even if you've never done that before, you don't know if it will work. You're unsure of what it will mean in your life. But if it really pulls you and excites you, go for it. Don't wait until something changes, until you feel sure. If the opportunity is here now, you must take advantage of it now. And then you must shore up your decision with action, coming from the new ways of feeling and being that you've been practicing and have embodied, as I've just described. Practicing bringing those qualities into your life now, before you get your vision, is really important so they become habitual, a way of life. But what we mostly do is focus on doing first, while forgetting the thinking, feeling, and being part. And then we do lots of things while feeling desperate, not confident, and not good enough. Because we don't seem to have the money, the time, or the support we think we need. Our new ways of thinking, feeling, and being have not yet become habitual, and that's the engine that propels life forward. Mostly, we live our life in reverse to how it's supposed to be. We do things to obtain money. Then we can have the things we crave, and then we will be happy. So you're doing, and then having, and then being. That's opposite to what it should be. Because happiness is not created as a result of conditions. Conditions are created as a result of happiness. So we must first be happy, harmonious or peaceful. And from that state of being come all the other states of having. We then have more time, more joy, more love, more abundance, more peace, and get inspired to do things from a place of connection and being worthy, confident, and powerful. So the order of our activity is not do, have, and be. It's be, have, and do. Living from a state of God acting through us in every activity of being one with our soul changes our self-concept and changes our character, evolves us into a better human being. And from a soul level, that is the most important achievement. If you go through life accomplishing only outer goals without transforming your inner being, it's a wasted life. And at the end of a year, let alone the end of our life, it's not what we've achieved in the world that gives us the most satisfaction. It's who we have become. Have you become a more loving, more peaceful, more allowing, more connected with life? Or more authentic and more empowered in your self-expression? That's what really counts. And let me give you a quote from the book Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. Your life is not about you, but it's about everyone else whose lives you touch and the way in which you touch them. Or in the words of Gandhi, become the change you want to see in the world. That's your true purpose and your calling. But until you make that firm commitment to first, through your daily practices, becoming the person who is able to sustain that big vision, and then doing whatever it takes in the world to make that vision a reality, it will be a really uphill journey. Difficulties and challenges will always arise. But when you've built the character to courageously face them and overcome them, then you become successful. And commitment is all about keeping your word to yourself. When you give your word and keep it, you're sending a message that says you can trust yourself, that you believe in yourself, that you're worthy and competent. That creates confidence, leads you to take bigger chances that generate even greater confidence and greater competence, and takes you on this upward spiral of confidence competence, which builds self-worth, self-esteem, resilience, integrity, and an inner strength and fortitude you would not otherwise have. Many people wish they were more confident, believed in themselves more, wish they felt more worthy, wish they could complete things. And all it takes is their decision, commitment, and absolute follow-through, regardless of circumstances. It's that simple, but also that difficult. So once again, We have come to the end of this call, and I hope that this has inspired you and motivated you to really find your calling and live the life of your dreams. And if you want more inspiration or assistance, I would invite you to visit my website, www.yanyaab.com, and get the free resources that you can download and put on your MP3 and listen to at any time. Because we have to start a practice of moving us towards a goal and do it every day until it becomes a habit. And it's the habits you have that determine your character, and your character determines your destiny and what you achieve. I encourage you to check out what my website has to offer. Among other things, a free one-on-one healing assessment session. If you have a particular problem you're grappling with and would like some help. There is also a home study program called The 7 Steps to Access Your Full Power. If you're looking for how to generally take your life to its next highest level. With that program, you will also get one free, full-blown private healing session that is worth many times the cost of the program. I love and appreciate you, and it's been great to be with you today. And I want to thank you for listening and wanting to create a better life for yourself. The more of us can do it, the better the world at large will become. And I look forward to the next time we connect again. My heartfelt blessings to you, and goodbye for now.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Yeah, it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Hi, Uri. It's Nicole Whitney calling News for the Soul. Welcome to News for the Soul, Robert Allen.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to be here with you tonight.
Why are you here? We're talking to Carolyn Mace about Sacred Contracts, one of her many best-selling books. Welcome to the show, Greg Braden.
Well, good evening, Nicole. It's certainly a pleasure to hear your voice and a pleasure to be here tonight.
Welcome to the show, Stuart Wild.
Thank you very much.
John Kehoe, welcome to News for the Soul.
Hey, how are you?
Next up, Dr. David Morehouse.
I'm so glad that you called me because you are doing such an important task, important work, because you are spreading a very positive message.
I was really moved by last week's show because we made a commitment to a worldwide event to try to change consciousness.
I'm feeling enormous energy around this show, just enormous, enormous. I really have to hand it to you, Nicole. You've created sort of a niche of amazing, amazing connections. It's just like... the angels and the devatas that are like attracted to News for the Soul is amazing.
And we love News for the Soul!
Hello everybody, this is Damian Brinkley. Welcome to the hearts and minds of Enfoldment. This is News for the Soul.
Hello, this is Satyan Raja, and you're listening to News for the Soul. Be open in your mind, your body, your being. Allow yourself to drench in this awesome information to evolve you to your next place.
Hey, this is Dave Morehouse, and you're listening to News for the Soul.